I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
The sky's so blue. Birds are singing, I got nothing to do. Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
It's a sunny day.
Sunny day now.
My pocket's empty, my cupboard's bare. Call me illogical, I just don't care. Hey, hey,
hey, hey, hey.
It's just a sunny day.
Hey, 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 it's a sunny day.
It's just
day.
A sunny day.
Yeah.
The KSL Greenhouse. Information and great talk about your home, garden, and your lawn. If you love perennials, can't get enough help on landscape design, or just want to keep your lawn and vegetable garden pest-free, grab a pen. It's the KSL Greenhouse on KSL News Radio.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria Chaleos with you this morning. We've let Ton Bettis have the day off. So with me today, Jerry Goodspeed is the director of the USU Botanical Center, and Sheridan Hansen, who is an assistant professor of horticulture at the USU Extension Service. Thanks, guys, for joining us today. It's going to be a hot one, and our lawns are starting to show that it's getting so toasty out there. What are some tips? Jerry, give us some tips on how we can best manage our lawns when it gets this hot.
Well, for me, the best thing to do is relax. First thing, don't get too worried about them because lawns are pretty resilient. But as far as cultural practices, mow high. Don't scalp your lawn. I always tell people, put it as high as you can on your mower setting. That's usually about 2.5 inches to 3 inches, depending upon your mower. And that's going to help do more for your lawn than just about anything else. Water deep and infrequent. Somebody was asking about on the hillside how to keep water there. Sometimes watering deep means watering it for 10 or 15 minutes, letting that soak in before you go and water it again. And so sometimes you'll have to cut back on the watering times on each of the stations and just run it through twice on one day, right after the other. In other words, station one, then two, then three, then four, then go back and do it again. So the deep watering, the letting the grass grow a little bit taller, and then being able to relax a little bit. If you see a little bit of yellowing, you're okay.
Yeah, it's funny how certain little parts of the yard are the ones that show the stress first. For us, it's on the north side of our yard. The parking strip, for some reason, always just struggles when we get into the heat of summer.
You know, that's very typical. That's because it's surrounded by cement. I mean, it's really hot in those areas. They're going to dry out first. I struggle quite, to be honest with you, with, and don't take this wrong, but with turf in the park strip, just because it's such a little area. It's always going to struggle, and it's going to take more water to keep it looking good. And I know that that's pretty common, but just be a little patient with it. Understand that it's not going to look perfect when it's 100 degrees outside. And I don't look perfect when it's 100 degrees outside. It gets down to about 85, I look pretty good. And you just kind of have to relax a little bit with the turf, and it's not going to die if it does get a little bit off-colored. It'll pop back. But, yeah, mow it taller. Sheridan, any other ideas?
Just making sure that you're taking really good care of your lawn year-round. I think making it healthy from the very beginning will really help to get you through the hot summer.
Okay.
So
the number to call with your questions this morning, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. Let's see who's been waiting the longest here. Let's go to Steve in Mapleton. And good morning, Steve. How can we help you this morning?
Good morning. Hi. I have several maple trees with the leaves turning yellow, and I found that it's iron chlorosis, and I've tried adding iron, chelated iron to the soil and sulfur to try to make the soil more alkaline, and I'm still having a lot of yellowing. I just Googled the problem, and I know there are Medicaps, little iron caps you can drill and put into the trunk of the tree. And I thought someone talked about adding liquid iron right to the tree, and how there's a professional service that will come and infuse iron into the tree. Is that possible to do on your own, and where would you buy that liquid iron?
Yes, to answer your question, it is possible. But I'm going to step back for just a minute and say, are these silver maples by chance, or autumn blaze, or
they're autumn
something
blaze
along those lines? Autumn blaze, yeah. And do you have a heavy soil?
Yeah.
Kind of clayish.
Yes, very clay.
So I'm going to, and this is what I tell people is, that's not a very good tree for your area. Autumn blaze, silver, anything related to a silver maple needs really good drainage, needs some things that we don't get in some areas in Utah, and they're always going to be a problem, and they're always going to cost you. And there are some other maples that grow just as fast that don't have that problem or that concern, such as Norwegian.
I was going to say Norway maples.
Yeah,
or...
well, the Norwegian sunset, yeah, or those types of series. And so my opinion is, when somebody comes to me, I'm going to tell you have two options. One is, the rest of the life of that tree, you're going to be treating it with iron, period. That's how you're going to get it to green up. The other option is to go get another tree, go ahead and keep the autumn blaze there, move to the side 4 or 5, 6 feet, and plant another maple or another tree that's going to do well in your soil. And then after 2 or 3 years, when the new tree gets up and starts to give you the shade you want, then you can remove the autumn blaze, the silver maple or whatever it is, and not have to deal with it the rest of your life. I'll just be honest with you. You can put iron on that thing and every year, and it's still going to be yellow.
I have about 12 of them, and they're 15 years old and 40 feet high. I don't want to take them out and lose my shade. Do you know about
then what you're going to be doing?
Iron,
yeah, yeah, there's
the trunk of the tree. Is that possible to buy somewhere?
Yeah, well, I don't know if it is. Online you can. I do know that.
And you need to know how to apply it. That's the other thing. That to do an injection is a little bit more difficult.
It's a little tricky, yeah. You're trying to get it right into that the phloem layer.
Right.
So,
yeah.
And I'll just be honest with you. You're going to be doing it the rest of the life of those trees.
Right.
So, with the iron that you added to the soil, there are a bunch of different types of chelates, and there's one that is really appropriate for Utah soils. And I'm wondering if you got the correct type of iron. So it's an FeEDDHA type iron. That's going to be your best bet. I mean, like Jerry said, you're going to be doing it for the rest of the life of the trees, and it becomes very expensive. But make sure you have the correct iron that you're adding to the soil as well.
And that's what you're doing.
F-E, E, D as in Dave, another D as in Dave, H as in Henry, and then A.
Okay.
A as in annually. Sorry.
Right. Okay, does adding sulfur help much to help the soil more alkaline? Didn't seem to help.
You would have to add... You would have to add sulfur to your irrigation water every time you irrigate. You have to have a sulfur burner, because our irrigation water is alkaline, and just like our soil is alkaline, and sulfur makes things more acidic. Adding that sulfur, we have some growers that do that in order to grow, you know, different fruits that maybe are not perfectly adapted to Utah soil. So they try to acidify their water and their soil, but they have to use a sulfur burner, and they have to acidify the water every time they water. So even if you just are using regular water, it's going to creep back up on the pH, and you're going to go more alkaline again.
I see. Okay. Thank
All right.
you.
Steve, good luck to you on that.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Our next texter is also in Mapleton, and they're talking about cottonwood trees, and mainly the cotton from those cottonwood trees. They were told that they were cottonless, but apparently they didn't get sufficient water over the years, so they are producing cotton. So they're wondering if there's... Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, they call them cottonless, but what it is there are some trees that have basically male flowers, and there are some trees that have female flowers. Mm-hmm. And what they call the cottonless cottonwood are the cottonwoods that have male flowers, so they don't produce the seed, thus they don't produce the cotton. But nobody instructed the cottonwoods that you have to stay with just male flowers. And so what we have found is over time they get lonely and they will start to produce female flowers, which in turn produces cotton.
Which has nothing to do with sufficient water, is what you're saying.
Has nothing to do with water.
So no. Is there anything they can
do with the,
to cut down on that cotton?
Once they start producing the female flowers, they're always going to have female flowers.
The thing you can do is replace them.
Okay, but they're 100 foot tall, so that's why
they're very large.
They like the shade, but
I know,
but not the cotton.
I hate to, you know, everybody wants...
You're breaking people's hearts this morning,
Terry. I know,
Cut down your trees.
Well, I try to tell people the way it is. I mean, I would love to be able to tell you, spray this on it and you'll never have cotton again, but I can't. They're just going to have cotton. And
you get snow in July.
You're just going to have to deal with it or replace them. That's kind of the options.
Yep.
Okay, Jerry.
Sorry.
That's all you can do for us.
See, this is why Tom never asked me to do this.
We are kind of picking on you today, aren't we? Okay, we'll take a break and give you a break for a minute. That number to call, 801-575-8255. Or you can text us your questions at 57500. We'll be right back.
A gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Thanks for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse Show, 801-575-8255, the number to call, or you can text us your questions at 57500. And let's go to our next texter here. They say they have swarms of bees, which they like, but they also have grasshoppers eating their garden, and they want to know if there's something they can do about the grasshoppers that won't hurt the bees.
Oh, yeah, you can use baits that are very specific for grasshoppers. There's a bait called Nolo bait. It's organic. You just put it down in the soil and the grasshoppers will eat it.
It takes a while.
And it's best put down early in the season when you first see the grasshoppers and their smaller size. The problem with grasshoppers, though, is they have jumping legs and they have wings and they can move. So you're going to be fighting grasshoppers throughout the entire season. It's not a one-and-done kind of fix.
Do you know where they live? Are they out on the west deserts or anywhere where they get in really good
grass? Oh, I thought you were asking where the grasshoppers lived. And I was like, everywhere?
Well, yeah, I wanted to go visit them, of course.
Okay, you too. The next question is, how do you support melons growing on a trellis so they don't break the vine?
Oh, okay. So there's a couple of things you can do. You can do netting underneath the fruits so that they don't weigh it down. Or you can use, and this is the only reason that pantyhose were ever invented, is to use to support those melons and pumpkins and things like that on trellises. You can get those knee-high pantyhose and tuck that melon into it, or you can make a little hammock for it with it. But that is the only thing that pantyhose should ever be used for, in my opinion.
I agree. Thanks, Sheridan. I had no idea what to do with all those old knee-highs.
I'm not touching that.
Don't go there. We're already picking on you. Let's take a call from Michelle and Sandy this morning. Good morning, Michelle.
Good morning, everybody. I hope you are all doing well. Another good thing you can use your nylons for is when you go camping, you put a bar of soap in it, and then you don't get it all dirty and icky.
Oh, see, nice. There you go. All right.
We can
love
do a
it.
Whole
Thank
thing
you.
On this.
I have four questions for you guys. My first one is, in my lawn, I have what looks like crabgrass, although I know it's not crabgrass. It's something else. I've heard you guys talk about it before, but I've never been able to write down what I need to get to put it on.
I'm wondering, Bermuda grass?
Does
that sound familiar?
It's the stuff that comes in earlier than crabgrass. So I know it's not crabgrass.
Is it a grass?
It is a grass. It looks like pasture grass.
Hmm. I guess I'd have to see a photo of it.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Okay,
my next question. If it's an annual that shows up every year, you can use a pre-emergent, and that might help to...
That's what it sounds like.
Yeah, that might help to deter it.
A pre-emergent?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then my next question is, my neighbors have a peach tree that's right on the fence line. I believe it has a borer because the leaves are turning yellow. And then I have a big, huge, gigantic, probably 50 feet tall, maple tree in my backyard. And the side of that tree that's closest to the neighbors, a few of the leaves, like maybe 24, are starting to turn yellow and droop. Is it possible for my tree to get a borer from their peach tree?
No, it's very specific to peach tree. It doesn't transfer over to other types of trees.
Okay, so what can I do for my yellow leaves?
It's probably just a little bit of heat stress. If it's just a dozen leaves, it's probably just dropping a few leaves due to heat stress. Because we just hit this really hot part of the year, and we've finally got these steady high temperatures.
Okay, another tree. I have a flowering pear tree in my front yard, but it's producing little teeny itsy-bitsy pears, and they get all over a lot of them. They get all over my lawn, and they're a mess. Is there anything I can put on that to make those stop producing the little fruit? You can't eat them. They're too small.
No, you can't eat them, and they're just a nuisance.
Is there something I can put on the tree to make them stop?
When they're in bloom, there's a product out called Florel, I think. It's still out on the market. That you can spray on it, and it's supposed to have those flowers that, you know, it'll cause the flowers to abort, and the flowers will drop, and you won't get the fruit on it. But it's got to be, the problem I've had with Florel, and Sheridan, I don't know if you've had this, but it's very time sensitive when the flowers are in bloom, and it's also a little bit temperature sensitive. And so I've had people apply it where it's worked great. I've had people apply it where it actually looks like it multiplies the fruit.
Right.
So.
Well, and I mean, the whole point of a flowering pear is for it to flower
too, right? Yeah.
So, exactly. So you're going to lose the bloom.
Oh, well, then I don't want to do that. So we'll just cross that off the list. Okay. My last and final question is brass planters. Can you actually plant things in brass planters, or is it too hard on the plants?
You can. I mean, you've got to have really good drainage. It is going to take quite a bit of heat. So you may have an area around the edge of the planter where nothing grows. It would depend on the size of the planter. If you can get enough stuff, you know, into that planter in the middle in the small area and have this ring around where the soil is too warm. You're going to have to watch the water very carefully. Jerry,
on the edge of the planter.
Yeah, Jerry might have an opinion on that too.
No, I was going to say you can plant anything you want. Now, do you want it to live, I guess, is the question.
Yeah, I want it to live.
Okay, yes.
Thank you.
Now, my grass planters don't have any drainage in them. Can I just go ahead
you
and drill
get
holes
it.
In them?
Yeah, you can drill holes. You're going to have to have a pretty decent drill bit and, you know, maybe some help to do that. I know I probably couldn't drill it myself,
I can drill it myself. I'm kind of a handy woman.
Okay, but what about putting a pot inside the planter?
That's what I was
thinking
too. But, you know, how do you find the exact right pot size to fit inside the pot that you're putting, you know what I mean?
Yeah, so you may have a little bit of an edge there where you have nothing and it's kind of a gap. But, yeah, that is a really good solution, Maria.
Okay. I already thought of that, too, but thanks, Maria.
You're welcome.
One more question I have for you. I know I didn't tell you I had this many questions. Snapdragons, how much water do they require? And I've heard that they can come back the following year. Is there anything you can do, like cover them or something, during the winter to make sure they come back the following year?
They should come back the following year. And they're really cold. Loving plant. They like cool temperatures. They do need a fair amount of water. Anything that produces a flower is going to need a fair amount of water. So I would say moderate on their snapdragons as far as water is concerned. If you have problems with them overwintering, you can mulch them. So you can put down a straw mulch or a leaf mulch or something like that over them to give them a little bit more protection and then remove that in the spring. But they should come back. I usually cut mine down to about 4 to 6 inches high before we go into the winter. And then it gives them a nice growing point in the spring.
And then do you cover them or anything with any straw? Or?
Yeah, I haven't had to cover mine. But if you're in an area where it gets a little bit cooler and you find that you don't have great luck, then yeah, then you can try the mulch and see if that will help over winter.
But they don't seem to come back year after year after year. It seems like I have them for a couple of years and then they
Yeah, a couple of years and then sometimes they decide to be done.
For my neighbor across the street, she has a wall that's like 6 feet tall high, and she has snapdragons growing in there every year. She doesn't do anything to them but water them. That's all she does. Mm-hmm. And they come back every single
They
year.
Like it there.
And they will also drop seed and come back from seed.
They'll reseed.
They will. Yeah. Very heavily reseed. So if she's not deadheading, you'll get the seeds as well.
So should I not cut them down to get seeds? Or?
Yeah, if you want them to reseed, just leave the heads on and let them drop their seeds.
Okay. Those are all my questions. I'm sorry
all right, Michelle.
So much time.
Thanks so much for your call this morning.
One more question. My snapdragons are planted with hostas. And I know hostas don't need very much water. Is that going to be a problem?
You're just going to have to split it down the middle is what I tell people. When you've got things that like water and things that don't like water, you kind of have to go kind of in the middle and see if you can find a happy spot for both of them.
You know, and right now they're dormant. They bloomed, all the snapdragons, and then they've wilted, and now they're dormant, and they'll come back. They're eventually coming back little by little. Uh-huh. And they're with my hostas, and so far I haven't had a problem with them. So I think I'm doing okay on that, on watering.
All right.
Yep, like you're doing great.
We need to take a break for the bottom of the hour news. The number to call, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was 3 blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com. Follow us on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen.